between them, catching freedom, finish fourth, a photo finish to decide the 150th Kentucky Derby.
And of course, we now know it was Mystic Dan crossing that finish line, winning the 150th Kentucky Derby. So congratulations to Mystic Dan, or I guess more so I should say, congratulations to the people that placed money on Mystic Dan at the 150th Kentucky Derby. Welcome into Glass Half Full, an ESPN Pensacola podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Glass. Hope you had a great weekend getting back into it here on a Monday morning. Of course, Mystic Dan winning the Kentucky Derby. Not the only thing happening over the weekend in the world of sports. Reigning Stanley Cup champion, the Vegas Knights, they got eliminated by the Dallas Stars in Game 7 of that series, 2-1 the final of that game. And in the NBA, Orlando getting eliminated by the Cavs as well on the road in Cleveland. That game was wild. I mean, you look at that game halfway through the second quarter. If you would have told me that Cleveland was going to win this game, I would have said you were insane. I mean, really. 106-94 the final in that one. The home team. This is why home court advantage in the NBA playoffs and home field advantage in Major League Baseball playoffs are so crucial, because the home team won every single game in this series. Started off with two in Cleveland, then we had two in Orlando, then we swapped out. Game five was in Cleveland, game six was in Orlando, and then game seven there with the Cavs taking home court advantage in this series. And the crazy thing was, these teams separated by one game. That's what these teams were, the 4 and the 5 seed. And what made them the 4 and 5 seed is the fact that Cleveland won 48 games in the regular season. Orlando won 47. That's it. That's all it took to decide this series, was literally one game between these two. Because honestly and truthfully, you look at the way that game played out in the second quarter. If that game is in Orlando, it was at the Kia Center now. Is that the new name of it? If that game is in Orlando at the Kia Center, I have a Magic run away with that game. But because it was in Cleveland, once Cleveland kind of started getting a little bit of rhythm and a little bit of momentum, that Cavs crowd got into it. That fired up the team, and they were able to pull it off, man. This was a crazy game if you watched it. An 18-point deficit for the Cavs. They were down 18 points in the first half, and they just slowly chip away at it. And they were even talking about it in the broadcast. They said, you know, what you want to do when you're in that situation in an NBA game, or really any basketball game, you want to try to get it within 10 at the half. And if the Cavs could do that, they would set themselves up for a great opportunity. Well, they took that 18-point lead and turned it into a 10-point lead for the Magic at the half. It was 53-43 heading into halftime. So they did exactly that, and they set themselves up for a heck of a run there in the second half. Especially by guys, Donovan Mitchell. I mean, this guy was so clutch yesterday, had 39 points for them, but the second half he had was just ridiculous. I mean, you make the argument, and you can easily make the argument, if Donovan Mitchell is not playing like that in the second half, we're talking about the Magic eliminating the Cavs right now, and they move on to take on the next round's opponent. The next round opponent that's waiting for them is the Boston Celtics. So Cleveland won, but they still have a very daunting task ahead of them either way. But some other things from this game, man. Other than Donovan Mitchell's performance, Orlando's second half performance was very abysmal. I mean, really. I mean, it was bad. It was really bad. 4 of 24 shooting in the third quarter alone. Let me say that again. 4 of 24 shooting in the third quarter. Orlando, the Magic could not hit water if they fell out of a boat in the second half. They could not do it. That lead started dwindling down. You also kind of started to see them panic a little bit and try to force some shots and try to make some plays and kind of create some opportunities for themselves to help slow down this run by Cleveland. But they just could not do it. Too much Cleveland, too much Donovan Mitchell there in the second half. Banchero for the Magic had 38 points, so he was right there with Donovan Mitchell as one of the top performers in the game yesterday. Orlando, now officially in the offseason, and honestly and truthfully, if you ask me, they have to find some offensive pieces. Look, I know they want to be built as a defensive team, and they were one of the better defensive teams inside the NBA this year, but they've got to find a little offensive help, right? You still, even if you want to be a defensive-minded football team, you still have to find an offense, right? And, I mean, we see that. I mean, you look at a guy like Nick Saban and his time at Alabama. He's a defensive-minded head coach, but he knew that they still had to have a good offense to win championships. Orlando's got to find a guy, maybe even two guys, that can come in and be those big-time offensive weapons for them. I'd heard rumors that they might look into Paul George in the offseason, see if maybe that could be a potential opportunity for him. Who knows what's going to play out there? But they do need to go find a guy who's going to be an offensive weapon because, I mean, you look at Banchero, he can't carry this team offensively. And like I said, they're built to be a defensive team. So when you get in a situation where you've got to start scoring, that is a problem that glaringly starts to show for the Orlando Magic. So offseason to-dos for them, you got to find an offensive weapon. You got to go find a guy who can come in, or even, like I said, maybe a couple of guys that can come in and provide a spark offensively for this team moving forward. I think the Magic are moving in the right direction. I think with Banchero and the rest of the pieces around him, I think they have the right things in place. They just need this. I think this is the last little ingredient they need to add to that pot to actually have a serious, legitimate championship contending team. I think this year was a step in the right direction for them. I think if they add this offensive help throughout the offseason, I think they're going to be moving in the right direction in the NBA. So exciting times if you're an Orlando Magic fan. In the NFL, J.J. Watt, apparently maybe retirement's not necessarily going the way he thought it would. He, in an interview, came out and said, yeah, I've contacted D'Amico Ryan. I've told D'Amico, if the Texans need me, all you got to do is call. If you call me, I'll answer, and I'll be there. So J.J. Watt opening the door. Now, here's the thing. If you're a Dolphin fan, or you're a Charger fan, or you're a Patriots fan, or you're a Eagles fan, or whoever, and you're like, oh, could we potentially get J.J. Watt? No, this seems like it's only with the Houston Texans type deal. You know, he played for the Texans. He retired as a Texan. I think if he comes back, he's only coming back as a Texan. So if you're a fan of another NFL team, don't get excited about the possibility of maybe your GM and your head coach going out there and talking J.J. Watt into coming out of retirement. That's probably not going to happen for you. All right. Maybe you could do it with Aaron Donald. I don't know. I've heard kind of some rumors that he might not necessarily fully be done, but also I've heard it at the same time he is fully done. But who knows what's going to happen there. But J.J. Watt looks like he's still got a little bit of an itch to scratch as far as playing in the NFL. And he told D'Amico Ryans, head coach of the Texans, if you need me, give me a call. I will be there. Another former player of the NFL. This probably not looking to come back anytime soon, even though he did recently make a comment about how that door is still kind of open. Tom Brady had his roast last night on Netflix. Kevin Hart hosting it. And lots of people showing up. The typical, like, celebrity roast. Look, if you've ever watched the celebrity roast on Comedy Central or whatever it may be, you've seen the typical people that show up for these things, the typical comedians. They were there. Also, there were some other interesting characters involved, including Bill Belichick and Robert Kraft. Nothing was really that much off limits. And maybe even some mending of fences. I don't know. Kevin Hart tried to get Bill Belichick and Robert Kraft to do a shot together. Robert Kraft was all game. Of course, it seemed and sounded like he had probably done about five or six before that. But he was definitely all game for the opportunity to do a shot with Bill Belichick. And they met at the podium. And, well, this is how it went from Robert Kraft's perspective.
I want to say this is the greatest coach in the history of the game that did what no one else has done. And having Tom Brady and him was the greatest honor the good Lord gave me. So, cheers.
Yeah. I was like, okay. All right. I was listening to ESPN Radio this morning coming in, and they were like, yeah, that's the best thing that's happened to you. Not the birth of your kids. That. Okay. All right. But yeah, I mean, look, Robert Kraft, I think he's got a point there, right? I mean, you look at if he doesn't have Bill Belichick as his head coach, he doesn't have Tom Brady as his quarterback. He might have been forced out of the owner of the Patriots because maybe he just doesn't necessarily do that good of a job. Because let's be honest, since Tom Brady's left New England, it's been a little bit of a dumpster fire up there, right? So, but lots of great fun jokes on that. You can actually, if you didn't get a chance to watch it yet, you can catch it. It's, I believe, streaming on Netflix. Don't watch it with the kids. Turn Bluey on in the other room for the kids or whatever. And then you can go and, you know, enjoy a cold one and watch this, you know, or maybe after the kids have gone to bed, you sit down on the couch in the living room and you enjoy it. Basically, my point is, don't watch it with the kids. Let's see. Moving on now. I know last week we closed out the week and the show on Friday doing a little way too early quick look ahead, just kind of like a little quick look ahead at our very own UWF Argos and how they might be looking heading into the 2024 season. ESPN on their website actually has a way too early top 25 for coming out of spring. It's kind of like a spring overreaction, way too early top 25. I'm only going to do the top 10 of that because I feel like once you get inside the 20s, there's kind of some teams that, you know, they might be ranked next year. They might not be ranked next year. Only time will tell. So didn't really feel the need to necessarily touch on every single team on that list, but I definitely wanted to go through here and take a look at the top 10 at least. So we'll start off. The number one team ESPN had on this list was the Georgia Bulldogs. I don't think there's a surprise with that. I think Georgia is the new Alabama. And what I mean by that is when Alabama had Nick Saban and they were rolling and they were competing and winning and playing for national championships just about every single season, it was not a surprise when a poll came out if Alabama was one or two. It was usually a surprise if they were lower than that. And I think Georgia is that new team that's taken that spot from Alabama where they're always going to be either one or two when a new poll comes out, and it shouldn't be anything that's surprising to anybody. So not really a surprise here that ESPN has this way too early poll starting at number one with the Georgia Bulldogs. Obviously, you look at a guy like Carson Beck coming back for them, expected to be even better than he was a year ago, and he was good last year. And he's expected to be even better, so that's definitely going to be an added bonus for them. They've added some weapons. Trevor Etienne, you know, the Florida running back, he is he's now playing for the rival there. Interesting situation. He enters the transfer portal and goes to one of the arguably biggest rivals of the school that he initially was playing for. Should make that game in Jacksonville extremely fun. Also, you've got guys like Dominique Lovett, Rara Thomas. Those guys should be stepping up and becoming go-to receivers for Carson Beck throughout that season as the Georgia offense continues to develop. And you lose a guy like Brock Bowers, you got to look around and you got to go, who do we have that can replace him, or who is there that we can go get to replace him? They got a pretty good one in Oscar Delp. I think this guy is he's going to be able to step in and kind of fill that void that's going to be left by Brock Bowers' absence. Brock Bowers, a big part of Georgia's offense a year ago, kind of that safety net for Carson Beck. He always knew he could go to Brock on a play if it broke down, find him, and dump the ball off to him. And I think Oscar Delp's going to be able to also perform that type of liability there. Liability, is that the right word? You know what I mean, for Carson Beck. That safety net, that's the word I'm looking for. The safety net for Carson Beck as they get ready for this upcoming season. Also, I know Carson Beck coming back, but if you're a Georgia fan, you got to be excited about the position of quarterback for the future. Is Jalen Rashada, another player with ties to the Florida Gators. Obviously, he was initially committed to, I believe, Miami, and then switched his commitment from Miami to Florida. Had a situation with an NIL deal go south, did not send in his commitment letter, or actually rescinded his commitment letter. He took it back, said, I'm not actually going to play for Florida, and ended up going to Arizona State. It's been at Arizona State the last year or so, and transferred just a couple of months ago, or entered the transfer portal, I should say, a couple of months ago, and recently made the decision to go to Georgia. So Jalen Rashada is actually going to be heading to Georgia. He's a guy who's very mobile. Got a great arm, but definitely is a guy that likes to use his legs a lot. So definitely a change in what they're going to see with Carson Beck this year. If they do go with Jalen Rashada next year, you know, see how that's going to change the offense there for the Georgia Bulldogs. But right now, you got to expect Georgia is going to be led by Carson Beck once again, and they've got the weapons around him to be one of those top teams and to be right there at the top of the playoffs. Again, remember, this year in college football, You only have to be in the top 12. You don't have to be in the top four anymore. You got to be in the top 12. You get in the top 12, you're in the college football playoffs. So that is definitely something to keep in mind out for. But I think Georgia's not going to be worried about that. Georgia's going to be in the top four. Even if it was still a four-team playoff, Georgia would probably be one of the playoff teams. Another team that's going to be at least have a opportunity to be at the top, Ohio State. They're coming in at number two on this ESPN ranking. It's way too early. Yes, they lose somebody like Marvin Harrison Jr. They lose a couple of other key pieces. But Jeremiah Smith and Amika Ibuka is definitely waiting in the wings right there. And that's two qualified receivers that you have to help fill that vacancy left by Marvin Harrison Jr. So, again, you know, you talk about how important it is to replenish your roster or just already have guys lined up ready to go. So that way when your big star leaves, because we've talked about it now with both of these teams that we've mentioned so far in Georgia at one and now Ohio State at two. Yes, they've had big names leave, but they've also had somebody sitting right there ready to go. And a little later, once we get a little deeper into the top 10, we'll be talking about a couple of teams that maybe had some big names leave, but didn't necessarily do a good job of filling those vacancies like Georgia and Ohio State. And that might be one of the reasons why they're as far down in the top 10 as they are. Number three, we've got Oregon. Oregon, the Ducks, now going to be in the Big Ten. The question there is you look at this team that is a fast, spread you out, score 60, 70 points a game type team, how do they transition to playing Big Ten football, what some people would call big boy football, that 3 yards and a cloud of dust, physical defense type football? I think they're going to transition just well. I think they're going to be perfectly fine. I don't think they're going to have any issue with moving into the Big Ten, because they have Dan Lanning as their head coach, and Dan Lanning is one of those coaches that gets it. He knows what it takes to be successful at football, point blank, period. Doesn't matter what conference you're in, what you're doing in that conference, he knows what it takes to be a successful football program. And that is one of the things he talked about after the spring game. He said, look, there's a certain level of effort and physicality to playing this game of football, and more importantly, being successful in this game of football. We have to practice that level of effort and physicality each and every day, and it will transition onto the field whenever we go to play games, no matter what conference we're a part of. And he's absolutely right. So I think Dan Lanning being the head coach at Oregon gives them the best chance out of any of the other Pac-12 teams to immediately transition and have success into the Big Ten. A couple of things to keep an eye out for with Oregon this year, though. They will be having a new quarterback, obviously Bo Nix, taken by Denver in the NFL draft a week or two ago. They'll have Dylan Gabriel. That name sounds familiar to you. Yes, that is in fact the same Dylan Gabriel that started his career out at UCF down in Orlando, transferred out to Oklahoma. He is now transferred again, taking full advantage of that transfer portal, I see, and he is now going to be the quarterback for the Oregon Ducks moving forward. And I think that's a solid option for them coming out of Bo Nix, going into Dylan Gabriel. We've seen it before. Dylan Gabriel's a guy who can make the throws. He's got the accuracy. He's got the arm strength. So it's not necessarily anything doubting his arm strength and his accuracy. He's a guy who is a little bit more mobile than Bo Nix, so he's going to be able to make some plays with his legs as well. So definitely looking forward to see how Dylan Gabriel plays in that Dan Lanning offense and with the whole, you know, Oregon team in general, because he's going to have a talented team surrounding him, probably the most talented team he's played with. No offense to Oklahoma and UCF, but this might be one of the more talented teams he's played and been a part of. Number four on this NCAA football way too early top 10, the Texas Longhorns, somewhere Matthew McConaughey is going, all right, all right, all right. Well, they're a top four team, but they got some issues, because here's the thing. You got a kid named Arch Manning on your roster wearing number 16. Threw for 350-plus yards and 3 touchdowns in the spring game, electrifying the crowd there in Austin and everybody coming out of that game talking about how well Arch Manning did compared to how your starting quarterback a year ago did in Quinn Ewers, who struggled on his only 2 series, and one of those included a pick six. And not good if you're the returning starting quarterback and you've got a guy like Arch Manning breathing down your neck. You know, if Arch Manning starts off this season, or excuse me, if Quinn Ewers starts off this season slow, especially with Texas being in the SEC, if he shows some signs of struggling early on, you know that stadium is going to start chanting Arch Manning in a heartbeat. And then you're left, if you're Sarkisian, you're left with a tough decision. Do I stick with the guy that got us to the college football playoffs a year ago? Or do I move on to this young phenom that everybody is excited to see? If you're an athletic director, if you're the boosters at Texas, you're going to want him to move on to Arch Manning. Why? Because Arch Manning is going to put butts in seats. People are going to buy tickets just to go see Arch Manning play in person. Right? He has that effect. It's like Bronny James. People are going to go pay to see Bronny James play just because it's LeBron James' son. Right? This is the nephew of Peyton and Eli Manning, the grandson of Archie Manning. People are going to go watch him play. Plus, so far, he's got the numbers to back it up. Like I said, in the spring game, throws for over 350 yards and three touchdowns. You definitely can't beat that. So we'll see what happens there, whether there's a true quarterback controversy or not. I think they probably still stick with Quinn Ewers going into the season. But like I said, if he struggles early on, especially with them being in the SEC, don't be surprised if we don't see a pretty quick change to Arch Manning there at the quarterback position. Notre Dame coming in at number 5. And Notre Dame, once again, going to be looking to take advantage of yet another ACC quarterback transfer. This year, it's going to be Riley Leonard, who's coming over from Duke. Now, the knock on Riley Leonard, and this could be something that that the Irish have to think about, he is injury prone. As a matter of fact, he is yet to take a meaningful like snap in front of people in a Notre Dame uniform because of injuries. He had ankle surgery and a little turf toe. It's kept him out of spring practice and the spring game. So we will get our first look at Riley Leonard when they kick off this season. If he can stay healthy, look, we saw what he did last year for Duke in some of those games. I think if he can stay healthy, it's going to be an awesome pick for Notre Dame. I think they'll be able to have some success with him at the quarterback position. But that is a big if he can stay healthy, because so far to his career, he has not been able to stay that healthy. Number 6, Ole Miss, the Rebels, the Land Sharks, whatever their mascot is. They are sitting at number 6. And this is the thing. If you're an Ole Miss fan, you've got to look at this and you got to go, you know what? I don't think we have had this much to be excited about since I don't know when. Probably before I was born. Because even looking back to the Eli Manning years, I don't think they were necessarily this excited about the program, even with Eli Manning there as a starting quarterback. Like, they look at this team and they say, we have a legitimate shot at competing for a national championship this year. And they do. They do. Again, I think this is one of those teams that will benefit from a couple of different things. First and foremost, Nick Saban's not in the SEC anymore. So that's going to open the door up for a little bit more opportunities for coaches like Lane Kiffin and their teams, who kind of were kept out of the SEC championship game because they couldn't get past Nick Saban and Alabama. Now you got to look at Ole Miss and go, okay, well, they've got a legitimate shot at potentially crossing over that line and actually making it to Atlanta for an SEC championship game. Or even more importantly, finishing the top 12. That's all you have to do. Remember, you don't have to be a top 4 team anymore in college football. You find yourself in the top 12, you are in the college football playoff system. And once you're in, anything can happen. So I think with Lane Kiffin, this being his most talented team, there's lots of excitement around it, especially with a guy like Jackson Dart coming back to be your quarterback. And I think, look, we're talking about this way too early, top 10 for college football. I think a way too early comment about the Heisman Trophy is that Jackson Dart could be a legitimate contender. I don't think that's an outlandish way too early comment, because I do think he's going to be able to put up Heisman-esque numbers there in Ole Miss in this offense with Lane Kiffin. I definitely think that Jackson Dart could be one of those guys that, no, we're talking about it now in the sense of, oh, it's good he's coming back and is going to be the starting quarterback for Ole Miss, provides continuity, provides structure. but nobody's really mentioning him in serious award conversations like a Heisman race. But I think maybe come late October, early November, when we start having that conversation, start looking at those players that are up there at the top of that list, I think Jackson Dart's name could very well be on that list. And I think another thing that mentioned Nick Saban in the 12-team playoff, I think you look around the SEC and you've got a question, who are the teams that can keep up with Ole Miss, right? Because even if Ole Miss's defense is not having the best day, that offense is always ready to score points, right? So Ole Miss could shut you down defensively and beat you. They could. Or if their defense necessarily isn't having a good day, well, then they just outscore you, right? That's why we see the final score. Some of these games, 57 to 48 or something like that. And it's just because they outscored them, made a play at the end, forced a turnover at the end, got a stop at the end to win the football game. So keep an eye out for Ole Miss. I think they really could be an interesting team to watch this upcoming season. And keep an eye out for Jackson Dart as well, as far as the awards go. Missouri at number 7. This is one that is interesting to me. Look, Missouri, yes, they got to a New Year's Six game. Yes, they beat Ohio State in the New Year's Six game, but it was one of the most, if not the most, boring bowl games of the entire bowl season. What was the final score of that game? Like 14-6, something along those lines? It was a boring game. Not a lot of hardcore heavy firepower. When you look at teams like Texas, you look at teams like Ole Miss, you look at some of these other teams inside the SEC that are going to have a lot more to offer as far as offense, as far as defense goes. Missouri is one of those teams that I think you look at Missouri sitting here inside this top 10 ranking, I would have left them outside of the top 10. There's a couple of other teams, and we'll get to some teams that were left out of the top 10 once we're done going through the top team. The top 10, there's some teams that were left out that I feel like should have been in the top 10. Maybe put them in there instead of Missouri. But Missouri is a team that, you know, they're going to have offensive issues this year. I think that they are. And I know they've got Brady Cook back at the quarterback position, but your quarterback is only as good as the offensive line that's blocking for him. And right now, there are major question marks with that offensive line for the Missouri Tigers. So we'll have to see how that plays out for them. If their offensive line can step up and those guys that they have coming in this year can play and protect Brady Cook and keep him clean in the pocket, then they're going to have a legitimate shot at being a good football team again. But if you cannot provide substantial protection for Brady Cook, I think Missouri, there's going to be situations where games that Missouri won last year, they'll have to potentially look at maybe losing this year. One of those going on the road to Florida, that could be, you know, that type of environment, bad offensive line could spell a recipe of disaster for you. Again, not quite sure what Florida's going to have. But again, I think that not having a solid offensive line is really going to hurt Missouri. I think they're going to be a good football team, but they're not going to be like they were last year. Number 8, we've got the Nittany Lions of Penn State. Again, another team that lost a lot on the offensive line. They do have Drew Shelton coming back. They've added Nolan Rookie. Again, I just don't know if they have enough. And this is kind of that counter. This is that area where I was talking about the counter offer of the Georgia and the Ohio States, who lost key players at key positions, but they already had guys ready to step up, or they went out and found guys either through recruiting or the transfer portal to fill those slots. These are those other side of that coin where Missouri, Penn State lost a lot on the offensive line, but didn't necessarily do a great job of going out there and finding those replacements that are of the same caliber that could fill that vacancy and fill that hole that was left by the players leaving to go to the NFL draft. So I both of these teams, Missouri, Penn State, if any of these teams at the end of the season this year are in the top 10, I would put more money on Penn State than I would Missouri. But even then, you've got to look at They've got to compete now with Michigan, Ohio State. You throw USC in that conversation. You throw Oregon in that conversation for the Big Ten now. It has gotten a lot more muddier in the Big Ten than it was the last few seasons. The last few seasons, it was Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, right? And then maybe a surprise team might rise up to the top with them. But usually they were the big three. Now you've added the Trojans. Now you've added the Ducks. Now you've added a couple of other teams from the Pac-12. It's gotten a little bit muddier. It's not just those same three teams at the top of the Big Ten anymore. So we'll see how that plays out, especially with those offensive line issues for Penn State. Number nine, Alabama. Yeah, new head, new territory for Alabama with new head coach and being this low in a top 10 ranking. Right? I mean, this is unprecedented for Alabama to be this low inside a top 10 ranking because we have not seen it the last few years. But I think Alabama is going to be a team that's, it might take a season or two, but I think they're going to be just fine with Kalen DeBoer as their new head coach. Ty Simpson, a guy who's really done some good things for him in the spring. Maybe even starting the conversation to where some people are like, oh, well, you know, could we see him if Milroe struggles? Could we? I don't think so. I think Jalen Milroe is the guy moving forward, and I think he's the guy moving forward because of the type of offense they're going to want to run at Alabama with this new coaching staff in place. Jalen Milroe is going to thrive, and I mean thrive with a capital T, in this new offense that's going to be brought into Tuscaloosa. And it is going to be interesting to see this shift going from a head coach who is defensive-minded, wanting to be more physical. Now you're going to a guy who's going to want to spread you out, still be a little physical, but he's really going to want to spread you out and score a lot of points. It is definitely going to be interesting. That's why I think it's going to take a year or two before Alabama is, you know, back to being that juggernaut that we've known them to be for the last, what, decade or so. So I think it's just, you know, he's got to get his finger, he's got to get his, not his fingernails, he's got to get his fingerprints on that program. He's got to get the right type of players in there for the offense that he wants to run. He's got a quarterback to fit that mold in Jalen Milroe, so he's good there, but he does need to get a couple of other key pieces on the outside to kind of help him through that offense. But I expect Alabama to still be a good team. 9-3 not be out of the question. 9-3, 10-2, not out of the question for them in their first year with a new coaching staff and coming off of Nick Saban's retirement. So Alabama fans, I know Alabama fans, all right, living in this area, know them well. You're going to expect to win a national championship this year, and rightfully so you should. But I will say, just temper that expectation just a little bit as you're welcoming in there a whole new coaching staff for the first time since, what, like 2005, 2006? Number 10, rounding it out, Utah. Cam Rising coming back for his, like, 25th year with the Utes. No, but seriously, Cam will be back, and he'll be pairing up once again. Dorian Singer, that could be a dangerous combination for college football. I mean, Dorian Singer could be one of those top teams or top receivers in the country. And I think Utah's got an opportunity here to have some success with, I mean, you've got a quarterback coming back for his umpteenth year as a starting quarterback, and you've got Dorian Singer in place. So definitely looking forward to watching some Utah Ute football. I think they could actually be a pretty decent team. Some other notables that weren't in the top 10, just running through some of these real quick. Remember I mentioned with Missouri, there might be a couple of teams I could actually flip spots with. This is one of them, Michigan. Michigan actually sitting at number 13 on the top 25 for ESPN on this. Look, I understand it. You lose your coach. You lose J.J. McCarthy as your quarterback. You've got a lot of other holes to fill. It's hard to kind of bounce back after winning a national championship and losing all that they did. But I still, again, would have given them the benefit of the doubt, and I would have put them at 7 instead of Missouri and put Missouri maybe at 13. That's just how it would have worked for me, at least in my head. Florida State, still kind of getting the short end of the stick and not getting respect from anybody, really. They are at 15, and again, kind of like the same with Michigan, lost a lot of talent. Jordan Travis gone, Trey Benson gone, Keon Coleman gone, Johnny Wilson gone. That is a lot of talent that Florida State lost. You got to expect maybe that offense is going to take a step back. But who knows? Could be even better this year. It's just one of those things. We'll have to just let the season play out and see how it goes. And then Clemson at number 19. Here's the thing with Clemson. They are no longer the program that we saw them be in the late 2000s, early 2010s type era where they were competing for a national championship with Alabama every single year. That is not the Dabo Swinney program we have now. Now, their offense is a dumpster fire. They don't really have anything that threatens or scares anybody else other than the ACC when they say, hey, we may go look to play for another conference. I don't think that Clemson is a good football program anymore. I think they have definitely fallen off. I think there's a lot that needs to be done to get them back to where they need to be. Unfortunately, though, they have a coach like Dabo Swinney in place. And say what you will, you can say Dabo's a good guy and all that. But at the end of the day, Dabo Swinney does not want to go into the transfer portal. He does not want to use NIL to play or to pay for players. That is how you have to operate in today's college football world. If you don't want to do that, cool. You're a dinosaur. You know what happened to them? Yeah, hit the road, buddy. I don't see Dabo Swinney being at Clemson much longer because Clemson's got to get a guy in there who's going to play ball the way it needs to be played on and off the field. Dabo Swinney's not that guy. He's not. Trevor Lawrence 2.0 is not walking through that door for Clemson anytime soon. You want to know why? Because Trevor Lawrence 2.0 is going to go take an NIL deal and play in the SEC or play in the Big Ten. I think the biggest problem for Clemson and why they've fallen off as a program is Dabo Swinney. And until he's out the door there and they have a new head coach in place that'll actually do the things that needs to be done to be successful in this era of college football that we are now officially in, Clemson will just continue to fall further and further and further until they're out of the top 25 altogether when we start talking about these way too early top 25 preseason polls. It's harsh to say, but that's just the way I see it. That'll do it for today's show. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Glass Half Full and ESPN Pensacola podcast with me, Jordan Glass. I will talk to you manana. Have a great day.